And welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the endarkened corridors of power and we shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is taking us. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center, to face the music and dance together, to address problems rather than merely defend positions. We have another purpose as well, and that is to provide context at a time when the content can be contradictory, confusing, overwhelming. So, context, context, context. Today, Election Day in the United States, we will view this most important election from a meta context, as in looking beyond the two-party duopoly and how we can best apply our energies at this time. And while Donald Trump is better seen as a symptom of the deeper problem rather than the problem itself, Swami has called Trump America's balloon karma payment, I think that there is certainly a clear and present danger of Donald Trump himself. So let's go back a few years. In the summer of 2015, I was waiting to board the Larkspur Ferry to take me to a San Francisco Giants baseball game. And in the waiting area, there's a huge TV screen turned to CNN. Donald Trump was on, and the sound was off. As I watched Trump's gesticulation, his facial expressions, his fist pumping, I looked at a fellow passenger, and we both said it at the same time, Adolf Hitler. Now, more than 3 years later, I've seen nothing to make me think otherwise. What was clear to me then is even clearer now. What I was looking at was a sociopath, a megalomaniac, who would do anything and say anything to benefit himself and who would ultimately destroy whatever he touched. I saw a pathological liar and a demagogue with no respect for the rule of law or the rule of love. Now, what we've seen dishonest politicians before, and those involved in many deep, dark misdoings, what I was looking at was something entirely different and more sinister. Someone who had the mindset and the chutzpah to make himself dictator. Now you might laugh at this individual who has been parodied and caricatured as a bumbling fool. Well, you know, they laughed at Hitler as well. And while Donald Trump is no Hitler in the sense that he has no overriding mission or ideology, his rhetoric landed with the same kinds of ordinary folks who supported Hitler. We've seen this more and more, particularly in this past week or so, where people who, like the MAGA bomber, literally Donald Trump on steroids, because he actually was very much hopped up on steroids, Donald Trump on steroids actually went and sent bombs to people. The bomber of the synagogue in Pittsburgh. All of these people, definitely emotionally disturbed individuals, you can't even imagine them as political operatives. But because of the atmosphere, they felt motivated to do what they did. And so this is kind of the conditions that we find ourselves in. And, once again, Donald Trump has taken all of the air out of the room because he's the topic of conversation. as the progressive analyst George Lakoff continues to point out, and Lakoff being a unfortunately unlistened to voice in the bewilderness, Lakoff has said that we have consistently, the progressives have consistently allowed the right-wing radical rhetoric to determine the conversation. So rather than creating a new conversation, the Democrats always seem to be reacting to, really, if it was a response, it would be much more better thought out, to the conversation that the Donald Trumps of the world have been cultivating for now 20 or 30 years. Now, you know, of course, my good friend, Will Durst, a great political comedian, you know, and we were joking when Trump came in that, wow, all of a sudden, after kind of a boring Obama presidency, finally there was material, more comedy material. And as a professional comedian, I can certainly testify that it's easy to make jokes about Donald Trump. It's easy to say that not only has Trump proved that anyone can grow up to be president, he's proved that you don't even need to grow up to become president. It's easy to say, how can you accuse Donald Trump of not acting like an adult? He's committed countless adulterous acts. It's easy to say that when Trump wanted to court fundamentalist Christian voters, declared, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Satan replied, "No worries, I'm behind you all the way." And when people concerned about the deep state say they voted for Trump because he's an outlier, it's easy to say, true enough, not even 2 years in office and already Donald Trump has outlied every president in history. Okay, so that's the jokey part. But very interesting, it's the truth in that last joke that offers the secret to Trump's dominance and appeal. He is completely honest about being dishonest. The reason he's been able to use his liability as an asset is because the conventional wisdom is all politicians lie, except that none of them brag about it. Donald Trump, he takes glee in every one of his dishonorable discharges, and he wears his dishonorability as a badge of honor. It seems confusing, but this is why so many people admire him for being truthful. I'm remembering the debate 2 years ago when he pointed to Hillary in one of the debates and said, "That's how politicians speak." I saw a brilliant evil genius at work. Even though the pundits, mainstream pundits, you know, dismissed this remark as a surefire sign that he was going to lose, I predicted that he would win, and sadly, I was right. So, as I've said before, Donald Trump is not himself the problem. He is a symptom of a much bigger condition that largely has stayed hidden, at least to progressive voters, during the Obama administration. Both parties, the neoconservative establishment Republicans and the neoliberal Democratic National Committee, have disenfranchised the American people through their unwavering support of what I call the corporate state. Now, lately, there's been a lot of talk about the deep state. But recently, I realized that a better term was corporate state because I think it really refers to the actual condition that awakening voters on each side have become aware of. What I would call the unholy interlocking alliance of corporate money and influence combined with the coercive power of the state. Interestingly, the term that Mussolini used to describe what has come to be called fascism was corporatism. Corporatism is another word for fascism because, once again, the power of money, the power of power are all intertwined in a system that preempts true democracy. Now, we've already been a de facto, quote-unquote, soft fascist state, at least since the 9/11 attacks the Patriot Act, the War on Terror. And when Obama took office, Swami said, the empire has a new face, but it still has the same big fat ass. So during the 8 years of Obama, we the progressives turned a blind eye largely to how essentially the foreign policy was not a lot different than the foreign policy of the Bush-Cheney administration. That even though Obama was really strong on the rights of minorities and so on, the same very, very, very small minority was in charge of everything else. In other words, you could not say anything against the military-industrial complex. Our very close embeddedness with the Israeli right wing. We couldn't say anything about the corporate rule, which has brought us fracking, genetically modified foods. And really, it's very hard to find mainstream Democratic politicians who've taken a stand against these things because, once again, the system itself is corrupt. The system itself is based on corporate money feeding both sides. And while we are distracted by the dance and the play that's going on, people are essentially disenfranchised left and right. Now, the way that divide and conquer has worked is that each side clearly is able to see the villain on the other side. That's why there is so much polarization. It's very easy for progressives to look at Donald Trump, progressives to look at the corporate side of the corporate state and see, my God, this is the evil that is destroying the world. On the other side, it's very easy to recognize how conservatives who are already concerned about the overreach of federal government can look at the state, at the government, and go, my God, these people are we're being destroyed by this totalitarian deep state. It's kind of like the blind man and the elephant. The progressives can only see the elephant's trunk. Actually, they see the big elephant. They see the Republican elephant, and they see that it's the corporations that are to blame. The right wing looks at the government and says, "My God, it's that coercive state that is way too powerful. That's what's to blame." And what we really have to understand is that it's the big picture. The big picture is telling us that it's the two of those working together. The combination of financial power of the very, very few, and that power being infused into the government to influence legislators. And Lawrence Lessig of Harvard Business School, Harvard Law School, has very articulately pointed out that it's both sides. It's the legislators who are thriving on corporate money, and it's the corporations who benefit, and that it's the entire impeachable system that has to be impeached. So as we look at the clear and present danger that Donald Trump represents, it's very, very important to recognize that once the body politic has navigated this dangerous passage, assuming that we do, what's really going to have to happen is that we're going to have to overgrow. We're going to have to impeach the entire impeachable system. You know, it's interesting that the study last year showed that more than 70% of millennials were dissatisfied with both political parties. A recent study shows that only about 25% of the population are deeply involved. In fact, it's less than, it's more like 20% of the population is fervently involved in either of the two political polarities. And that most of the people in the middle would be willing to find a solution that transcended and included both of those polarities. Imagine those polarities working together instead of dueling dualities as a dynamic duo dance partners. However, the complicity of the mainstream media in insisting on this, on reinforcing this polarization, on making people take sides, even in their polling tactics, they are forcing people to identify with one tribe or another. And so consequently, it seems like we are very deeply divided, but in actuality, we have a deeply united body politic, that more than 90% of us want money out of politics. More than 90% of us recognize that neither of the two political parties have our interests at heart. And that's really why so many people have stayed home. Now, we have a very interesting guest coming up at the half hour. I'm going to tell you more about him later. But one of the things that's true is that he recognizes that really we have to see beyond, both sides have to see beyond this dueling duality that we're facing right now to a bigger truth. And he's somebody who I would have considered on the other side, you know, as a conservative Christian moral majority Constitution Party candidate. But as we'll find out, we have a lot more in common than we thought. We're going to take a little break. I'll be back with a little bit more about this election time and what we can do. And then we will have our guest show up. Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
In the wake of a disaster, what one thing can you send that will help people the most? A blanket, a tent, a sandbag, a doctor, Actually, if you send a monetary donation, you send all these things. Even a small donation can make a big impact and can quickly become exactly what people affected by disaster need most.
In the wake of a hurricane, your monetary donation can make a huge difference to those in need. To donate, visit supporthurricanerelief.org. That's supporthurricanerelief.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Steve Behrman back here with WikiPoliticky. We're on election day here, and very interesting that it's actually people are beginning to recognize that really, even though the body politic seems to have very little choice in the candidates that we get to vote on, we do have a binary choice this year. And there are even some very prominent Republicans who recognize the clear and present danger to rule of law, primarily, in the Trump presidency. And those who aren't running for office are running from Trump. For example, Steve Schmidt, perhaps the most famous of the never-Trumpers, he said recently that the Republican Party has become, quote, corrupt, indecent, and immoral, and a danger to our democracy and values. He called for a blue wave to bring back Democratic majorities in the midterm elections. He says, quote, I do not say this as an advocate of a progressive agenda. I say it as someone who retains belief in democracy and decency. Richard Painter, Bush administration official, has officially become a Democrat. Decided to run for Senate as a Democrat this year. Once again, these people who actually recognize, who are willing to look the heart of darkness in the face, recognize the danger. Just the other day, somebody else, another Republican leader, let's see, what is his name? I'm losing his name here. Max Boot, great name, Max Boot. He said, I'm sick and tired of a president who pretends that a caravan of impoverished refugees is an invasion by unknown Middle Easterners. And he says, in an opinion piece in the Washington Post, former Republican says, vote against all Republicans, every single one of them. And so here we have, why is he saying that? He's saying that because essentially he's recognizing that we have devolved to the point where we are actually in danger of a fascist takeover in this country. Should the Republicans, Donald Trump and what I call the Vichy Republicans, retain control of all three branches of Congress, then he, just as he is sending troops to the border for an imaginary invasion, he can send troops anywhere he wants. He has the arbitrary authority to do many, many things. And so I think that as we look at this election and we look beyond the election and we look at the possibility of first impeaching Donald Trump because he's, you know, a blatant liar. I think that the Mueller investigation will uncover some very definite criminal behavior. It's up to the people of this country to begin to speak to the Republicans, because it will have to be the Republicans who impeach him. And it will have to be we the people, all of the people of America, waking up, coming together, being in conversation, listening respectfully for one another, to one another, and allowing the most constructive ideas to emerge. That after this election, between this and 2020, there will need to be a great people's upwising, where we wake up, wise up, grow up, and show up in a way that we haven't before. We have a tremendous legacy in this country, even though there are those who would say, well, the founders, they were slave owners, you know, they decimated the native peoples, they failed to adopt the Council of Grandmothers. All of this is true, And at the same time, they were so far ahead of anyone else at that time. And now the next phase in our evolution, spiritual, political, psychological evolution as a civilization, is to recognize that we the people are wiser in the aggregate than all of the experts combined. And once we create an infrastructure for civic engagement so that we, the people of America, can listen to one another and hear what we have to say collectively without the filter of mainstream media, without the filter of corporations, without the filter of governments. And that's really what's going to happen, what's going to have to happen if we are to survive. First, we need to get through this election. And as these prominent Republicans are warning us, we need to stop the Trump. Very good. Thank you. We need to stop our forward movement of what I would call the corporate state. And the only way to do that, by the way, is by we the people of this country beginning to have a conversation with one another. So I think we have our guests with us, and I'm going to do the introduction right now. I'm very happy to have this man with me, Reverend Chuck Baldwin. And I'm going to read you a quote from his most recent post. Quote, "All of the bitterness and political hate speech going on between liberals and conservatives, between Democrats and Republicans, is nothing but public theater. Some of the rancor and bitterness is indeed genuine, of course, while some of it is as phony as a $3 bill. But all of it only serves to provide cover for the real power brokers who are manipulating the left and the right for their own purposes. Deep state moguls couldn't care less about all the arguing and bickering going on between the two parties, except as it provides them with an effective distraction from the things they really care about, knowing that at the end of the day, both parties will continue to further their agenda." The author of that quote is my guest today. He's Reverend Chuck Baldwin, a conservative Christian minister who's been a leader of the Florida Moral Majority. He was the Constitution Party's candidate for vice president in 2004, the Constitution Party candidate for president in 2008, when he got the endorsement of Republican Congressman Ron Paul. He is now pastor at Liberty Fellowship in Kalispell, Montana, and has a weekly column that he circulates. Welcome, Dr. Baldwin, or can I call you Chuck?
You can call me Chuck. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you so much. You first came on my radar during the Bush-Cheney years when I found your column, and I was really impressed by what I call your meta view. You'd been a Democrat until Ronald Reagan's campaign. Then you switched to Republican, but you saw right through the neocon con. And now, once again, when many conservative Christians thought they found salvation in Donald Trump, you haven't been fooled, and you've called him out as a con artist. So I appreciate your meta view. How did you come to this point of view, and why do you imagine that so many of your fellow conservative Christians have fallen for the Trump routine?
Well, you know, I've analyzed that quite a bit, Steve, and I think it goes back to Ronald Reagan. I was, as you noted, a part of the so-called religious right back in those days as a Florida leader for Moral Majority, leader in the Christian Coalition. I was involved in the epicenter of the religious right movement, which was, of course, married to Ronald Reagan. And until that presidential campaign, I don't think this really existed. What we're seeing now among evangelical Christians and the way they have become absolutely not only enamored, but I think maybe transfixed on the GOP in general and Republican presidents in particular. well, what happened before Ronald Reagan? I mean, it's a long story, but I remember being in the meetings. I was a youngster then, just, you know, coming up, but I was there. I was in D.C. I was in the meetings with all the big names that you can think of, and I, you know, I saw and heard what was going on. And I think it's best encapsulated in the statement that Gary Bauer made one day in a press conference in Washington, D.C., in which I was present. And there were several of the leaders of the religious right that were taking questions from the media. And I'll never forget this one question. The press asked the question, "What exactly do you want?" And I thought that was really a good question. Of all the questions that were asked that day, that's the only one that stands out in my mind. And I thought it was a good question. What do we want? And the one that answered the question was Gary Bauer. And Gary said, "All we want is a seat at the table." And I remember as a young man listening to that statement, and I thought, really, is that all we want? A seat in the table for ourselves? You know, it's not about the Constitution. It's not about the principles of truth. It's not even about scriptural principles. It's about having a seat at the king's table. I mean, the king's table was implied. That's what it was implying. I was young. I just let it go, and I went on. But from that moment on, I believe that the conservative Christian, the evangelical Christian leadership across the country, and now we got largely new players, but it's the same game. They want a seat at the table. That's what they want. And I think that everything that's happening and everything they're doing is predicated upon that desire. And as a result, if that's truly what you want, then what are you willing to do, or what are you willing not to do, to keep or to get your seat at the table? With Donald Trump, he has given his evangelical leaders a seat at the table even more than Reagan did and more than G.W. Bush did. And if your goal is to keep that seat at the table, what are you willing or not willing to do? Well, virtually anything. And I believe that is the problem. I believe that the religious right, for the most part, has sold their soul to get a seat at the king's table.
Wow. It's very well put. I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's probably what's the case, is that, you know, once again, it's temporal power and this intermixing of religious structures, which are hugely influential for people. And so the rank and file of people who have simply found goodness at their church, and it's a way of life that they prefer, all of a sudden they're caught up in this political thing, which has a lot more to do with power than it does to do with integrity.
And the perks of power. Let's not forget that these leaders, the ones that are being invited to the White House, the ones that are in on the conference calls, the ones that the staff at the White House are calling and, you know, feigning to want to know their opinion and thoughts about things, and the ones that are making these trips, the ones that went over to Saudi Arabia just a few days ago, the ones that are, you know, constantly being wined and dined by the Trump White House, the perks that go along with that are more than any common person can imagine. You think about the financial benefits to these individuals. You are tapped into a flow of financial resources that are the greatest in the world. These are the people that are supporting the richest candidates on earth. These are among the richest people on earth. Their influence is absolutely unbridled. And whenever you think about the perks that go along with sitting at the king's table, it literally staggers the imagination.
You know, my wife has a family friend who is fairly religious and very much very conservative. And she was talking about her two sons both working for the Trump administration. And she was just enthralled. She was saying, you would not, and of course now because her sons are working for this, she can be ushered into this world. And she was totally enthralled with this. And she says, you can't imagine the life that I now am exposed to. And the part of me that you know, again, that's not somebody that I know personally. It was a phone conversation. But the part of me that wanted to say, you know, where's Jesus in all of this? What might the wise ones say about being drawn into this world of money, power, fame, and fortune that we've all been bombarded with, you know, for our lifetime, certainly. Which brings me to the question, how is it that you saw this and other people didn't?
Well,
I mean, you know, it's a silly question, but I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I was caught up in the traditional left-right paradigm just like everybody else. When I was part of the religious right, you can imagine, I was there whenever George H.W. Bush was chosen to be Ronald Reagan's running mate. I mean, I was there during those negotiations and deliberations and back and forth. And, you know, there was a sizable number of the evangelical leaders at that time, including me, that just despised G.H.W. Bush, knew he was not a conservative, much less a constitutionalist. He was a New World Order globalist, and everybody knew it even back then. And, you know, I remember all of that. There was a large movement among us for Jesse Helms, Senator from North Carolina at the time, to be the running mate. There were a few people that were supporting Jack Kemp and a couple others, but, I remember that. I remember how all that took place and how it didn't take long for the powerful leadership of the movement to rally behind Bush, and that's all it took, and voila, he was chosen to be the vice presidential running mate and eventually the vice president and president. So I was as much a part of that as anybody could be. I flew with Jerry Falwell, my mentor. I graduated from Liberty University in 1975. I flew with him on his private jet several times, not only to campaigns around the country, but also to the Middle East. And I remember, the excitement of it all. I remember the enthusiasm of it all. I really thought I was, like so many of them today, I really thought I was serving the country and doing the right thing and standing for God and faith and all those things. I mean, I really truly believe that. There were a lot of things that happened. The one I alluded to a moment ago was just one example of things that, as I was exposed to all this, I started to question the veracity of what we were doing and why. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the turning point began in 1996 when the religious right supported Bob Dole over Pat Buchanan. That was a major turning point for me. I didn't really do anything about it at that point, but in my mind, it was a major turning point. I mean, that to me was just an egregious violation of all of the principles that we claim to believe.
And then I'm going to have to interrupt you for just a second, Chuck, because we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes, and we'll hear more about this. My guest, Reverend Chuck Baldwin. This is Steve Behrman on WikiPolitiki Radio.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network, presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to Om Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos. A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi, Steve Behrman, Wiki Politiki. We're back with Reverend Chuck Baldwin, and we're talking about looking beyond the two-party divide and the deep state. Chuck, what is your definition of the deep state, and what's your take on all of these people who claim that Donald Trump is going to stand up to the deep state and expose the pedophile elites and on and on and on?
Sure. Steve, first, let me finish my thought on the question before
sure.
we went to the break.
Sure.
You asked me what,
excellent. Yeah.
What happened, the Dole campaign in 96 was the beginning of the thought processes that may, I think, awaken me to the reality that at the higher echelons, there's very little difference, if any difference, between the two major parties in D.C. It was the election, however, of G.W. Bush in the year 2000 that really solidified that. I was willing to give the man a chance, just like I was with Donald Trump, whenever he first campaigned. And said, well, you know, he's saying some good things. He's saying a lot of things that we need to hear. Let's give him a chance. So I did that with Bush. It didn't take long. And we realized that he was just a knockoff of his father and all the globalists before him, and that he was going to expand the perpetual war doctrine into a frenzy, in which he did, and he was going to take us into, you know, foreign countries like never before, which he did, and, you know, he wasn't going to contain the deficit spending, which he didn't, and on. So, you know, I was on my radio show, so I started doing what I do now, and that's telling the truth, no matter who it applies to, regardless of whether it's Democrat or Republican. And when I did that, of course, that's when the big reality came in, and I realized that, boy, not everybody is really wanting to know the truth here. Not everybody is interested in an objective constitutional, limited government, personal freedom, natural law, a philosophy driving their motivation into the political world. They really are caught up in the politics of politics, just like everybody else. And that was the revelation when I realized that, boy, is there a divide here between people who claim to believe the same things among the so-called conservative right wing, however you want to say it, that's not all created equal. Not everybody's in it for the same reason. And so from that point on, I just determined that I was not even going to play the game. I was going to be totally, frankly honest, according to my understanding of truth, natural law, constitutional government, et cetera. When Trump came along, I did the same thing. I said he wasn't tested. He never held public office. We had no voting record. Only thing we had was his past, business dealings, and that was suspect enough. But we didn't have a concrete track record to go on politically. So I said, we've got to give the guy a chance. Let's see. Well, as soon as he's elected, he begins selecting CFR and Trilateral Commission globalists into his administration, just like Obama, just like Bush, just like Reagan. Mm-hmm. And so what's the difference? So I realized from the get-go that this guy was not really who he said he was, and so I began to continue to analyze and so forth and so on. So, but the difference is that the evangelical world has taken their infatuation and their robotic loyalty to Donald Trump to a degree, Steve, that I've never seen before. It was pretty bad under Bush, Bush II. With Reagan, that was the first introduction to the whole phenomenon. And I think at the beginning, most of the guys, I'm not talking about guys like Gary Bauer, I'm talking about the rank and file Christian leaders of America at the time. Most of them really were motivated by a good heart. They wanted to bring America back to a sense of basic truth and honor and constitutionality and biblical principles and all. I think most of them had good hearts. That all changed, though. After Reagan, it became, we must support the Republican Party. We must support G.W. Bush. We must support Donald Trump or whoever the flamboyant candidate at the time is. And it transcended the principles, and it became purely political. And now then with Donald Trump, I'm reminded of a verse in Galatians chapter 3, verse 1, I believe it is, where Paul laments to the Galatian Christians and says, "Oh, foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you that you should not believe the truth?" He was saying that these Christian Galatians were under a spell. They were under a spell. They were bewitched. And I really think that that's happened under Trump. I think this is more than politics. I really think that this is a spiritual, supernatural bewitchment of so many that call themselves Christians. They treat Donald Trump like he is a god. They will accept absolutely no criticism of the man. They will accept the fact that he might do something that is not 100% right, true, constitutional, just, etc. Anybody who will not jump on board the Trump train, they will rally, they will try to destroy, I've been threatened more since Trump got elected from so-called Christians and conservatives. I mean real threats. I'm not talking about idle threats. I'm talking about real threats. Under this Trump, whatever it is, than I ever was whenever Democrats and liberals were in power and I was railing against what they were doing and all those things. So I'm sensing that this is more than just a normal left-right. As bad as I think the left-right paradigm is, this is worse than that. This is a supernatural event going on in that I believe Christians and pastors have given themselves over to seducing spirits.
You know, talking about the seducing spirits, I think that this has been going on ever since Edward Bernays, who wrote the book Propaganda almost 100 years ago. And the sophistication of how people's emotions are manipulated is way beyond what was being done during World War I, you know, when there are all these posters against the Hun and all of that. And I think that over this past period of time, let's say the leaders of the Christian coalition movement kind of went through this red light. They didn't recognize this seduction. And I would say it's absolutely, you've spelled it out as a seduction. I think that those who look at the nefarious aspects of the deep state, the biggest part of that is keeping people emotionally aroused so that they're willing to commit acts of violence. And it could be this side, it could be that side. It's obviously the fringes. And those acts of violence create more fear, which make people more easily manipulable. So to kind of take it into the future, what do you think, how can we overgrow this? How can the American people, and I'm having to say American people awakening on all sides, no matter what their political tribe that they're coming from, how do we begin the conversation that can dismantle this?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, let me answer your deep state question, too. That's another misnomer that so many people, they throw that word deep state out because Trump has used it, and so many within his circles use it, and so now it's become an everyday word. Most people, when they think of the deep state, they think of Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, and George Soros. You know, to them, the deep state are liberals. They are the George Soros philanthropists. That's to them the deep state. What they don't realize is that the very definition of deep state means that it's deeply seated individuals and groups of individuals who work out of sight, who are not known by name, and you don't even know what they're doing, where they are. By definition, they are deeply embedded in government and business and religion to the point that you never know what they're doing and who they are. The idea that George Soros is the epitome of the deep state is ridiculous. You know, in the first place, if I were to look at individuals such as that and try to say, well, which one is more of a threat to liberty, I would say that Sheldon Adelson is a much greater threat to the liberties of America than George Soros. And yet when you listen to the rank-and-file Christians and evangelicals, they demonize Soros, but they idolize Adelson. Both of these individuals are antithetical in their movements and beliefs and so forth to liberty than maybe anyone else you could think of in terms of notoriety. But again, they don't recognize one to be a threat, but the other is defined as the deep state threat. The deep state, in actuality, it works seamlessly between the parties. The deep state doesn't care about most of the politics that the American people care about. They don't care about most of the domestic policies that we care about. The deep state is basically a neoconish agenda, a Zionist agenda, if I can even use that word, to globalize not just the politics, which is the minor part, but the economic and military considerations are the major part. It is a pervasive, perpetual war doctrine. It is this whole thing of regime changing and exporting democracy and war on terror. And all these rubrics that they throw out is nothing more than to keep the American people and the world itself in a state of a perpetual war. of course, it further facilitates not only the goals of globalists who want to have their way with nations around the world for the purpose of economic advancement more than anything else. It's just amazing to me how most of the nations that we're engaged in with some kind of invasion or attack or bombings or drones or whatever are rich in oil or natural gas or things of that nature. You know, the poor nations of the world, we just
What a coincidence. What a coincidence. You must be one of those coincidence theorists.
But nobody thinks about that, Steve. I mean, it's just like when you talk about that, it's like they look at you like you're from Mars with that, you know, glassy stare, and they don't even seem to make the connections. So, I mean, even the thing about the deep state is being used as a ploy, and the phony QAnon phenomenon, which is absolutely, absolutely phony baloney from day number one. There's not a bit of reality to it. And yet people are swallowing that, and it furthers the deep state. It furthers the left-right paradigm more than anything else could ever do. So
It does. I wish we had more time. I wish we had more time. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I hope to talk with you again, Reverend Chuck Baldwin, I'm sorry. And he's been talking about overgrowing the current system. This is Steve Behrman, WikiPolitiki. Happy Election Day.